You're listening to
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 315. I am your host, Aaron Makem, and this week we're going to talk about Fringe. I'm not going to go into it. I've already recorded the review of Fringe. If you hate Fringe and don't like Fringe and you want to be a hater and a communist, then you can go ahead and skip it. It is going to be about, I think it's an hour and 10 or 15 minutes. And I'm covering the pilot episode. I have some feedback from the episode from one of the diggers, and I'm inviting all the rest. But I go into that during the Fringe segment. For right now, needless to say that since that is so long, I'm going to just give you a quick bit of DVD release news. We've had a lot of interesting things come out, you know, in November in the last couple of weeks. A lot of geeky films that I think that all of us will like. And I always kind of look forward to Christmas time for the simple fact that some of those DVDs that you've been waiting for are going to drop in price, you know, for, you know, Black Friday or Cyber Monday or Purple Thursday. You know, are going to have all these different things coming up. And also there's usually a ton of different gift sets, gift variations that they try to put out with multiple films and things like that. So it's a good time to economically add to your film collection. You know, with that being said, you know, the thing I'm still waiting for John Carter to drop in price. I refuse to pay $25 for a movie that I know didn't do very good, and it's not like we're going to get a sequel. There's no reason for me to support the film that way. I saw it in the theater, and I know that it's going to be end up being like, you know, a $8 or $9 Blu-ray at some point. But this is one movie that I do want to see on Blu-ray for sure, because I know that it's just going to look beautiful. And so I'm waiting for that to come down in price. But anyway, with that being said, on November 9th, we had The Amazing Spider-Man and multiple variations of that. Also, one of those deals where I know that some of the retailers like Target has a different bonus disc that you can get and things like that. So depending on where you want to get it. I do have to say that The Amazing Spider-Man Blu-ray DVD combo pack was right around $18, which is about what I think a new release should be. Some of these new releases come out and they are just outrageous. And, you know, I have such a backlog of things to watch, but I tell you what, being, just knowing that there's so many different sci-fi things out there. It has become almost a game for me when I go into the store and I go and look at DVDs and I stand there and I go, why am I here? Why am I looking at DVDs? I have a ton of stuff at home to watch. And it's always like, you know, I'm looking for deals because I don't know why. I look for deals. I don't buy them. And then later on, I'm bitter because I'm like, man, I should have bought that, you know? And like when it comes to movies and things like that, the way I look at it is usually when we go to the movies, there's four of us. So even on matinee day, even if we catch a matinee, it's $6 a person. So it's going to be $24 plus if we get a soda. Even if we go on, we have a dollar day here where you can get a dollar soda, a dollar popcorn. But even if we get two sodas and two popcorns, okay? So, you know, you're looking at about $30, you know, with gas and everything. And that's conservative. And so I think, you know, if I'm going to buy, you know, I'm better off to buy a Blu-ray and then, you know, I can either have it or I can lend it out or whatever. But anyway, I go and I'm always looking for deals. My favorite place to do that is Target, because they have some of the most bizarre DVDs on sale. They had Lex there, season one and two together, and season it's together in one box set, and season three and four, and they were $10 a piece. And I almost bought them, and I said no, but I found a series called Star Hunters, and it was $5. For all 22 episodes. It says it's a complete series, but there's not. There's actually a season two that they changed the actors on, and it seems to be kind of up in the air about whether, how much, you know, continuity and blah, blah, blah. But that wasn't there. But this was $5. And it was the last one, and I saw it, and I saw $5 I picked up. I must have carried that thing around the store for 20 minutes while I decided where I was going to spend $5 on. And then finally I just said, you know what? I'm just going to get it, and if I hate it, it was $5, you know? But anyway, with that being said, we've had some good DVD releases. We had Amazing Spider-Man on November 9th, which was a Friday. November 13th, we got Brave, multiple variations of that. You know, I am really surprised at how big of a difference there is in reviews of Brave. Either people love it or they hate it. and I loved it. I thought it was a great film. I thought it was a great Pixar film. I know some people out there were saying that it was scary for the kids. I didn't get that at all. But I'm not a kid, but I didn't see, I'm not even sure where it would be scary at. I just like the fact that they had a strong female character. I like the story, even though we've seen that story before. I really enjoyed the story, and I really liked it. I thought it was a fantastic Pixar film. But, you know, love it or hate it, you know, it came out. We have the Watchmen Collector's Edition that comes out with the books and everything else. I'm not exactly sure how much that is, but I'm sure that is, I'm going to investigate that while I'm talking. The Pixar short film collection is available. And Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is available on Blu-ray. I'm not exactly sure if that would be worth upgrading. You know, I'm not big on upgrading older films because it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because they really can't do, you know, for the most part, they don't do a very good job, unless it's something super special. The Ultimate Collector's Edition is the uncut plus the graphic novel, and it's on Blu-ray, and it's $50 in case you don't have Watchmen or a variation of Watchmen. So that there's that. Lost Girl Season 2 hit the streets on Tuesday as well. And I'm trying to think of Marvel Knights Astonishing X-Men came out. And that seems to be about it for science fiction stuff. Now, on November 20th, we are going to get The Expendables 2. I pre-ordered it. I just love The Expendables movies, and I watched them over and over again. I bought the first one on Blu-ray. It was like my third or fourth Blu-ray purchase that I bought, you know, as soon as it came out. All the other Blu-ray stuff except for Iron Man, I was like, I just bought cheap ones. And so I bought it as soon as it came out, and I watched it, and then I think I've watched it two more times since then, so I figured it was worth it for me to buy it on Blu-ray. I get my money's worth out of that. The Eclipse series, I have no idea. All the horror movie series, that they have different horror movies that they put together. Game of Thrones Season 1 is going to be available in a special edition. Transformers Prime Season 2 is going to be available. Grave of the Fireflies, which is an incredibly sad anime, but very well done. There's a movie, Tarantino Double X. I'm not exactly sure what that is. It's the 8-film collection where you're going to get Pulp Fiction, Inglourious Basterds, Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, Jackie Brown, Death Proof, and True Romance. That is actually... Man, the majority of those movies are really good. I think of my favorite, I know everybody likes Pulp Fiction, but True Romance is one of my favorite movies of Tarantino's, and I just loved it. But that's going to be $70. Not that that's sci-fi, but I think it kind of falls in there. Although, you know, I know the Death Proof, you know, people kind of gave it, you know, mixed reviews or whatever. But if you're going to see that movie, you want to see the Grindhouse complete collection with all the commercials and everything in there. That's what makes that so great. You know, it just adds to it and really puts you in that frame of mind. The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers are going to be available. I'm not sure what version of that, but it's there. And I think that's going to be about it for... let's see. This is kind of a... there's a zombie movie coming out, and... of course it stands out because of the name of the zombie movie. This is, it's uncut in 2D and 3D. It looks like this is an Asian film, and it's called Big Tits Zombies. Okay. I'm just saying. All right. And, going to go to Netflix and see if they have that. Anyway, that seems to be about it. But still, we got some good stuff. We got some good stuff. If you like anime, you got Inuyasha, The Final Act. And that seems to be about it for sci-fi stuff. We have a lot of good stuff, and I can't wait till the beginning of December, because I figure all the special box sets are going to be coming out, you know, when that happens. I do have to say that on the following week, we have Paranorman, which I thought was a really fun movie. Really enjoyed that. We went and saw that in the theater, and I highly recommend that. And we have Step Up Revolution, okay, which is, you need to go see the trailer right now. Just stop listening to the podcast and go watch the trailer for Step Up Revolution. I don't know if I'm going to buy that, but I'm definitely going to rent that. We're going to have a Step Up Revolution party here, because this has got to be the dumbest movie ever. And if ever any movie ever need to be made fun of, this is going to be it, okay? What got me is we went to see, I think it's when we went to see Paranorman, actually. and they advertise this movie beforehand. And what was the line? It's time to stop doing performance art and start doing protest art. So it's the dancers versus the land developers. And I just need to absolutely see that. Blast from the Past, Cagney and Lacey box set is going to be coming up here shortly as well. If you live in the UK, you're going to get a couple of, on the 19th, you're going to get a couple of sci-fi DVDs. Doesn't look like there's a lot, but there are some fun DVDs. Arthur Christmas is coming out. Red Dwarf X is coming out. Dr. Seuss's The Lorax is coming out. And, you know, that seems to be about it. Where is the Doctor Who, man? Come on. And I don't see it. I don't see the Doctor Who. And that's kind of upsetting. Yeah, I don't see any Doctor Who, and I'm kind of upset about that. Not that I ever buy it, but you know, I like to see it in the list. Not a whole lot of science fiction. You guys might be in trouble. It might be I hope you stocked up, because it doesn't look like you got a lot of stuff coming out. I do want to mention to everybody out there. I know that as sci-fi fans and sci-fi geeks, and we have sci-fi geeks in our life, and we like to buy them gifts at Christmas time or during the holidays or whatever you celebrate. I celebrate Christmas. I know some people don't, get over it. But it's what I celebrate. So I don't need emails telling me blah, blah, blah. but whatever you celebrate, whatever it is that you want to give gifts about. I want to remind people in the States that, you know what, you can go to Amazon in the UK and get some good deals. And, you know, I just want to say that if you are looking for some good deals, now's the time to do it, because it takes a couple weeks to get it. And I have gotten some fantastic deals on discs there. You just got to make sure that if you're buying the Blu-ray, it's region free. If it's DVD, hacking the region code on your DVD player is nothing. It's software. So you can just look it up and you can find out how to do it. On a Blu-ray player, I have yet to see one you can do through software. It's all hardware. You got to chip the DVD player, or you got to buy a region-free DVD player. I mean, Blu-ray. So, you know, I bought my Planet of the Apes there. I got my Harry Potter set there, and I got my Alien set there, and I got them for way cheaper. But some of those were half of what they were in the States. And, it just took a couple of weeks to get them. But, if you're just keep that in mind during this season, or if you want to buy yourself a nice gift, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, we get a bonus at work, or, you know, we just want to get ourselves something nice. Cause I know that for me, I'm kind of looking forward to, as much as I love science fiction TV and I talk about it on the show a lot, I look forward to that break after Thanksgiving and, you know, before Christmas rolls around, when there's nothing really new on television and, you know, your shows aren't new yet. And, you know, usually even the first week of January, when things aren't new yet, and you have an opportunity to dig into your DVD collection and start watching DVDs. I can tell you how backlogged I am on stuff. I just need more time to play around. But, you know, the one thing that I wanted was I wanted Star Trek on DVD. The original series didn't have it. And I got it last year as a gift. And I haven't finished season one yet, but I have all of the seasons, and I just have not had the time to sit down and watch all of them. There's been so much stuff on, and I always tell myself, you know, I'm going to do it. But it's like one of those things. It's like Star Trek, the original series, is like the foundation of a lot of my sci-fi love, right? And so I know it's always there. I know that when I want to watch something, I can throw it in. It's always there in the background. I now have it. I have the most pristine version available. And so it's kind of like the new interesting stuff. You know, like I got this Star Hunters DVD set, and I can't wait to dive into it. And I just haven't had time. Once Thanksgiving rolls around, my life is pretty crazy until January, as far as time-wise is concerned. And especially with Star Hunters, I know that I'm going to watch it, you know, at least watch one episode of it. I'm going to want to talk about it on the show. So I'm going to be like meticulous and checking things out, you know, and try to give a somewhat comprehensive review. But for me right now, it's all about watching Fringe, man. So with that being said, I'm going to give you my Fringe review. Like I said, it's well over an hour, so you can skip ahead if you don't care about Fringe. But I kind of hope you don't, because I'm really digging this show. And I mean, as far as doing a rewatch of it, I'm really into it. And so with that being said, here's my Fringe review. Thank you. since its debut in 2008, I have been watching the television series Fringe. I've talked a bit about it on this show over the course of the years, and it took a long time for it to grow on me. I had to get through the first half of season one. Not that it was bad, mind you, because the acting is all top-notch, and I really enjoy the stories, and everything makes sense. It doesn't seem as though there are huge issues with the world that has been created here. You know, we don't have like the X-File fail that happened around season four when they just decided to change everything up. We don't have, I'm going to make some comparisons to Lost as I do these breakdowns, because, you know, when Lost was over and, you know, all the fanboys were like, oh, this is the greatest show ever on television and yada, yada, yada. You know, one of the observations that somebody had made was that, you know, Lost was probably the last great television series we would see, because nobody could afford to produce something like that anymore. And, you know, obviously a lot of that was the fact that you had so many actors on Lost, and that was a huge, you know, that was a huge budget deal. And the fact that the show was so popular and so hot in the ratings, that, you know, obviously these people are going to want more money every year, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the reason I'm going to make the comparison to Fringe here is that Fringe is still on. I mean, we are in the last season. It's a 13-episode season. They knew it was coming, so hopefully we're going to get a satisfactory ending. I've been watching it every week, and I absolutely, my love for the show deepens with each episode. The acting is just top-notch, absolutely top-notch. And the one thing that you will hear me say probably during every time I talk about Fringe, during every episode I discuss on this show, is the fact that John Noble has not won an Emmy is a freaking crime. Okay, it is just an absolute crime. And every time I talk about it, I get a little ticked off. Normally, I don't care about these things, but how can this guy not get an Emmy? I mean, he is just top-notch, fantastic actor. You know, he really does make this show. He has to have one of the best roles in television right now. And it's funny because one of the more minor characters on his show, the young woman who plays Astrid, it seemed a bit of a throwaway role in the beginning. Not that it was, you know, not important role, but that, you know, it wasn't very broad. And then as the show goes on, her role really opens up, and she really has an opportunity to shine. And I'll get more into that as we go along. Fringe is one of the ultimate science fiction shows for people like us. Not only does it have a great story, and not only does it deal with science fiction that takes place now. You know, this isn't a space show. It isn't, you know, it isn't a fantasy type show. You know, it is, you know, we're dealing with, you know, creatures, you know, with a lot of makeup effects and things like that, or spaceships or things like that, or laser guns or things like that. This is very much in the vein of like the X-Files, and the fact that it's dealing with real people right now, and they're dealing with fringe science. Okay. And the idea here is that they are able to sell the science to me as something that could possibly work. You know, obviously, you know, this stuff really doesn't work, but obviously they sell it as, you know, it possibly could work. And there are certain things that they can do to make you think that, that, you know, that it can work. But I'm going to get into that in a minute. You know, we have a couple of major characters here that you need to know. I will be introducing all of these characters during this pilot breakdown. A couple things you need to know about Fringe. The first season of Fringe, or at least the first half of the season, I can't remember how many episodes they did this for, but had very limited commercial interruptions. So the pilot episode, you know, was basically in a 2-hour television block. But the other episodes are around 52 minutes because they had limited commercial interruptions. And I absolutely love this. And this worked, I think this worked for the network for a couple of different reasons. They didn't want people to change a channel or get up during the commercial, you know, and disappear. And they wanted people to stay kind of glued to the sets. And so they had some money invested in this, right? Because not only did you have J.J. Abrams and some other big names attached to the show, there was a substantial marketing campaign for the show before it premiered, and then they had limited commercial interruptions. So I'm assuming that they made less money, but they could probably sell those spots at a premium. The upside of that is that during the DVR, which is how I watch everything, you know, you had to watch your skip button. You know, you click skip, and then I end up passing it up, and I have to come back. And so although the shows were and I keep forgetting every time I turn Fringe on that it was limited, so the commercials were much shorter, and I kept having to come back. And I ended up actually viewing more commercials that way than I normally would. So I think that that was kind of a win, at least for my viewing, you know, for the networks, you know. Anyway, we have a couple of major characters here. We have Olivia Dunham, played by Anna Torv. We have Peter Bishop, played by Joshua Jackson. We have Dr. Walter Bishop, played by John Noble. And those are the three that you're going to see every single episode. You also have Astrid Farnsworth, who is played by Jessica Nicole. And you have, although he doesn't make a lot of appearances, he's in several episodes, or he comes up in several episodes. You have John Scott, played by Mark Valley. And you also have Philip Broyles, played by Lance Reddick. And he does a fantastic job. And I felt as though, you know, the thing that I forgot about until I started doing the rewatch was how hostile he was to Olivia Dunham, because Olivia had prosecuted a friend of his who did something wrong in the Army, and he was very hostile. And as the episode goes on, I felt as though it was a very organic the way that he ends up kind of changing his opinion of her. Anyway, I'm going to jump in here and I'll drop in little tidbits. You know, one of the reasons that I think that this show is fantastic for people like us is not only a good story and all that, but there are all kind of Easter eggs in every episode. There is the fact that we get glyphs in between commercials, and there is a collection of glyphs. There is, you know, an apple that's cut in half that, you know, actually has embryos, human embryos in it. There is a seahorse that, you know, we see from time to time that has, actually, I don't quite understand the seahorse. I'm not exactly sure what's on it. There's a six-fingered hand. There is a frog that has, and the frog has become very popular. It has a symbol of phi on its back. We have a butterfly that the wings are actually made up of human bones. A flower that has, some of its petals are dragonfly wings. There is a leaf and that has the delta symbol on it. Smoke, which is in the shape of a woman's face in profile. And a horn. I haven't seen the horn very often. I think in the premiere you see it, and that's about it. But anyway, you have all these symbols. Well, every symbol has a dot of light by it, by one of the corners. Like, some of the symbols have a dot of light on all four corners. Some only has a dot of light here and there. But this dot denotes, that way the symbols actually are glyphs, and they denote a letter. So at the end of every, or during, if you take the symbols and you write down the letters for every episode during the commercial break, there are actually, it actually spells out words that, you know, you don't need to know them, but it's kind of a fun thing, right? And like, for example, the pilot episode that we're going to see right now, and I will talk about these every time, you know, at least I'll try to remember to. The pilot episode, you have the butterfly, the leaf, the six-fingered hand, an apple, the frog, the hand again in a different position, the apple in a different position, and the frog again, and it spells out observer. And it's funny because some of these were misspelled, and then they had to fix them on a DVD release. But it spells observer. And the observers, again, this is something else that I'm going to make a loss comparison here. And I'm just going to make the Lost comparison, and we can discuss Lost at a later time. It shows that they had a connecting idea entirely through the series. It wasn't, oh yeah, we know what we're doing, and we're just doing all this stuff, all this crap, and it ends up meaning nothing at the end, or there's a lot of discombobulated seasons or episodes. It all makes sense. It all ties together, and every season they seem to kind of reinvent themselves, but it makes sense. But it spells out Observer, and the reason that this is important is that although we're not introduced to the Observers yet, we will. They play a big part in the series of Fringe. I need to point out before I go any further, in case I forgot, that this, as with all my breakdowns, every one I've ever done, this is filled with spoilers. If you don't want to be spoiled and you haven't seen Fringe, then you need to not listen to this, because I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to give some of my observations and talk about some of the things that I think make this show great, aside from the acting and the story. The Observers are these bald-headed guys that wear suits and fedoras, and they end up playing a huge part in the overall story as time goes on. Okay, I'm not exactly sure what episode, because I just started my rewatch. I'll get into to what a mess that has been in a little bit, but they play a huge part in the overall story. They play a huge part in Walter's life and Peter's life. But we don't really meet them yet. That's not until the middle of season one. But the thing that's funny is after we meet them, I started noticing then what they do is they observe, and that's why they're called observers. And they basically they kind of keep a journal somehow. I'm not sure if they write it down or they communicate to one another, but they observe. And after they were introduced and we officially met the Observers, I started to notice them and pick them out in every episode, and it became a really fun game, because I actually had some people that I knew that weren't science fiction fans but had started watching this show, and they just kind of got busy and kind of fell away from TV in general, but all during season one, after they were observed, I'd meet up with them and say, okay, did you see the Observer? And we would start spouting out where we saw them. Sometimes there'd be more than one, there'd be placed throughout the episode. But what was funny is then I've kind of gone back and started noticing the Observers in the episodes long before they were introduced to us, which kind of shows me that these things, that they were thinking about this, far ahead of time. And then, of course, because it's the internet, I never even realized that this existed. I actually went to Fringepedia, and I think it's there that I don't want to look around while I'm talking, otherwise I'll have these awkward pauses, but I'm pretty sure that on there you can find a list of and screenshots of all the Observers and where they appeared. The only thing is that there's not a timestamp on those, and I will be giving you those except for the first couple of episodes once I get DVDs of this show. What has happened is that I've been thinking, and I've had a lot of start and stops on series on Sci-Fi Dig, because as much as I love all these different series, sometimes doing the breakdown just was not fun, because in the time it took me to do a breakdown and everything, you could have watched the episode twice. And because doing a breakdown on this show, I mean, I'm not complaining at all, but it does take a lot of time. First, I have to watch the episode, and then I have to watch the episode again on my computer and pull the audio. And that means scrubbing back and forth. So usually the second time, it takes twice as long. So you figure, about an hour to watch the episode, about 2 hours to pull the audio, and about another 2 hours to put the segment together. And then I record the regular podcast. So you're looking at 5 or 6 hours. I didn't want to get stuck doing that for a show that didn't have a whole lot of meaning. Not to say that Farscape or the X-Files didn't have a lot of meaning to me, but didn't need a lot of explanation, didn't need a lot of dissection, Babylon 5 was one thing because it was fun connecting the seeds that had been dropped two seasons before. And that is one of the reasons that I think Fringe is perfect for me, is because there's so much to talk about per episode. Not only is there the overall story and the great acting and what it all means, but there's all these little things I just talked about. The glyphs, the spottings of the Observers. There's also spottings of the glyphs during the episode in certain areas. And one or two of these I've seen, but apparently there's much more than what I've ever noticed when I watch this show. I've only watched this show once. I've never gone back and done a rewatch. And I actually decided when I decided I wanted to do this, I said, well, you know, it sure would be nice if I could find this streaming somewhere. Well, sure enough, Amazon, I'm an Amazon Prime member, and Amazon has it streaming. And I have to say that I watched this on my HDTV, and it looks phenomenal. I have DSL, okay, so I don't have, like, super high bandwidth or anything. But I watched this, you know, using my Blu-ray player. It has the Amazon app, and it looks phenomenal. It looks better than what I get through my DirecTV in HD. I mean, it just looks out of this world. So if you want to watch this and you're an Amazon Prime, I highly recommend watching it this way. It is just out of this world. It looks fantastic. Could not be happier with it. Unfortunately, I said, well, I don't need to buy the DVDs because I can just stream this on my computer and capture the audio that way. Yeah, no, I can't, because you have to scrub. And so every time I miss a segment, I'm like, okay, I had to go back 30 seconds. It takes 5 minutes to reload back to where it was. And that is one of the biggest problems I have with streaming media, is that it refuses to load enough to your system memory to be able to, you know, scrub it and work around it the way you need to do it. And it became too difficult. So when I pulled the audio for the first episode, which is what I'm doing right now, it took me about 3 hours. But once I started investing the time, I'm like, you know, I might as well finish it out. And then I ordered the DVDs. That's the other thing, too, is I wanted to get the DVD set. And I thought, well, if I'm going to buy this, I'm going to buy this in Blu-ray, because this was a show that actually had a Blu-ray release. Some of their shows, they've gone back and done a Blu-ray release. But with Fringe, the Blu-rays, the HD actually looks really good. It's not like an older show that, you know, they kind of went back and redid, and it's kind of sketchy. Like, I've experienced that with Supernatural. I have season 3 of that on Blu-ray, and although it looks good, it doesn't look great. You know, it does look better in than a DVD in a lot of places, but overall, it wasn't worth the expense of buying the Blu-rays for something that it seemed like it had been upgraded. They tried to upgrade it a little bit, where Fringe looks a little bit better. But anyway, I started pricing it out, and I'm like, wow, this is a really expensive show in the long run. But because Amazon UK is my friend, I was able to basically order the box set of seasons 1 through 4, and they have to deduct a VAT tax on there. With shipping and everything, when it was all said and done, I ended up paying about $15 a season. So I'm not going to complain, because this is a show that I will watch again. I know that I'll watch it again. I will be buying the final season whenever it becomes available on Blu-ray. So it is not a big expense for me, and it's something I'll watch again. And also, for those of you that, you know, one of my problems with doing breakdowns of episodes has always been I have to use my computer to pull the audio. Well, my computer doesn't have a Blu-ray player. Recently, my SuperDrive has been kind of acting up, and rather than replacing the SuperDrive, which would cost $79 plus I had to tear the computer apart, I bought an external Blu-ray player, and it worked out really well, because the Blu-ray player reads everything. It can replace my SuperDrive for burning discs. I can also burn Blu-rays. It was only $10 more than the SuperDrive, and the icing on the cake was the fact that I had to buy Blu-ray software in order to play it on a Mac. Well, the software was $40, and I was like, well, I want to try it first. Well, here's the beauty of the whole thing. The software puts a big watermark in the center of the screen until you purchase it. That's the only downside. Well, I don't care what the screen looks like, because I can still see what's going on, and I can still pull the audio. So that worked out real well for me, because I never intended to watch Blu-rays on the computer. I just needed it to pull the audio for the podcast. The reason I bought it is so that I could pull the audio for the podcast. For some of the Blu-ray releases that I've purchased. I don't have a lot of stuff, but people tend to give me stuff on Blu-ray. And then if I want to do an episode, I have to find a way to pull the audio. And that's how I did. That was a very long tangent about that. I want to get into the show. The first audio clip I have here is of Olivia Dunham and John Scott, played by Mark Valley. They are both agents in the FBI, and they are having... I can't say they're having an affair, because they're not married. They're having relationships, which is kind of frowned upon, and they're trying to keep it on the down low. So they're in this motel, and this is what happens.
Oh my God!
What?
This bed is loud.
You think?
We can't keep doing this, sneaking around.
Department's not a massive fan of office romance. The policy summer was endless, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. OK,
Get fun of myself staring at you. Actually, I had to move my chair to stop.
Well, I think Charlie knows.
No, he doesn't know.
Well, I think he does.
If he knew, he would be transferred. The idea of somebody making a call whether or not you and I get to live in the same city, that's unacceptable to me. Anyway, that's all just preamble to the kicker, which is that I love you.
Olivia Dunham. Yes, sir. Of course, sir. Yes, sir, I'm on my way. Incident Logan, international flight. Charlie's on his way.
Now, Charlie is Agent Dunham's partner, okay? John Scott is not her partner. They just happen to both work at the FBI. And Charlie plays a big part in the first few seasons, but he's her partner, and they're going to go investigate this thing that's happened here. The person in charge is going to be Philip Broyles, played by Lance Reddick. And what has happened, what we see in the beginning of this episode, which is really cool and really it's really graphic and really well done for television, is that there's a jet flying. Somebody is having some issues, and he pulls out a an EpiPen or maybe a diabetic pen or whatever, and he injects something into himself. And next thing you know, the entire plane is full of dead people, and they're falling apart, and their skin is turning translucent, and some sort of viral outbreak. So anyway, the agents head there to the airport, and I have a couple of sound clips here. I'm going to try to put these together. The first meeting of Olivia Dunham with Agent Broyles, and their relationship is really interesting for the first half of this episode, where he's just being an asshat, and she decides at some point to stop being nice and start pushing for what she needs to get, and it ends up working out. It just makes a very good show. But I'm going to try to string a couple of sound clips together here, and you guys can get the gist of what's happening.
We got a flight out of Hamburg, 147 passengers. Towers lost contact 3 hours in. They thought it might have been electrical interference.
They entered IR space, radio silent, Navy then scrambles two F-18s for escort. They reported stains in the windows, no signs of life aboard the jet. White House approved the CDC request for the jet not to be opened until they arrived.
No signs of life? Who was flying the plane?
Logan's one of the first airports with the Pearl autopilot system. Plane landed itself right on time, unlike every flight I've ever taken.
Well, let me assure you, we'd be happy to treat you as family, too.
Good old NTSB. They like to think they're cops.
Agent Scott.
Agent Francis. Agent Dunham.
Whatever the hell McNeary saw through that window, it made him throw up in front of his whole unit.
Excuse me. So what's going on here? Some sort of accident?
Tarmac's closed. Nothing you have to worry about, sir.
All right.
Move along.
I'll do that. Thanks.
Although this is a joint task force, you are all now reporting to the Department of Homeland Security. I'm Special Agent in Charge, Broyles. DC has sent me here to make sure we get results. Standard level 4 hazmat suits are required to go in. Members from each agency on the starting line as follows. CIA, Baranoff. FBI, Charlie Francis and John Scott. Everyone else stand by. Okay, people, let's move.
sir. Olivia Dunham, FBI interagency liaison.
Liaison on an interagency task force. Gotta love that. Kind of like powdered sugar on a glazed donut.
Excuse me, if I'm going to do my job effectively, I like my information firsthand. That's not redundancy, that's accountability.
I know exactly who you are. You want in, liaison, suit up.
Anyway, they investigate the plane. They see the horror that is just all these people and skeletal remains and goo and everything else on the plane. And, of course, you know, they're trying to get everything together and figure out what's happening, what's going on. And as interesting as the case is, you know, the first episode is not really about it's not so much about what the crime that they're solving, you know, or what has happened here. It is about setting this series up and what this what the fringe agency is going to do. I call it the fringe agency. It's not really, but it is definitely a kind of how they refer themselves since they're dealing with fringe science or pseudoscience. Anyway, Broyles really does not like doesn't like Dunham at all. And so he wants to send her out to go investigate these storage units. This is the exchange that happens. It's her and John Scott who go and investigate this. And here's the sound clip. And as you can hear from the clip, he is just not very nice at all. He's completely trying to demean her. He's just so angry with her for what she has done.
What? That? You're telling me that's my assignment?
Yeah, honey. Would you mind?
The decision was made to burn the plane only after it was determined.
Petty bastard. He's pissed because his best friend sexually assaulted three Marine privates, and I'm the bad guy because I put him away.
Broyles is an idiot.
You're smarter, you're stronger, you're much better looking. He's jealous.
What?
You said you loved me. In the motel.
Yeah.
That was a big deal.
Yeah, well, you didn't say anything back, so I just let it go.
I've been sort of bad at this for a long time. Until you. I wanted to say I love you too.
Check the trash together.
Well, what happens here is that they investigate, they open up some storage units, they finally find the storage unit that's got to be a part of this whole plot type thing going on because there's like monkeys in there and cages and all kind of chemistry equipment. Well, they end up chasing a man and they are in the middle. It's a very good scene, although it's kind of, the first episode has a lot of these little gaffes. Not only do we have some geography problems, some of the geographic things aren't where they're supposed to be, but there obviously is some issue with snow because if you watch this scene, some parts of it there's snow on the ground, some parts there's not, and it's kind of interesting. But to me, that's not a big deal. That's any kind of you're kind of fighting the weather and you're under a deadline, and I think once you have this much time and money invested in a series, you kind of got to go with it. And these are minor things. These are things I can deal with as a viewer. I can't deal with them just suddenly changing the rules of the universe. That's the problem that I had with like the X-Files, that, you know, things that they had set up and that were kind of written in stone and were kind of part of the universe. They just suddenly changed, didn't give a lot of explanation for. And that became part of an issue for me. But you're not going to, I don't really think, trying to think back, I don't think you have that problem with this show. I think things are pretty straightforward. You just have some of these little minor geography issues and obviously some of the little I don't know if it falls under cinematography or continuity issues. You know, if it's snowing and then it's not snowing, there's snow on the ground. Next scene, there's not snow on the ground. Next scene, there is snow on the ground. You know, anyway, they're investigating this. The guy blows the storage unit. Olivia Dunham gets knocked out, and John Scott ends up getting infected with whatever this is, and his body is turning translucent, and the effect is very, very well done when you watch this. I mean, it's really cool the fact that you can still make him out, but you can see like his teeth through his lips, and you can see his veins and stuff like that. And there's a lot of little things that go on in here that, although I wouldn't think are super expensive effects, are just really well done. But anyway, what happens is that they can't figure out what's wrong with him. They don't know what was in the agent that affected agent. They don't know what was in the chemical that affected the agent, and because it's all blown up. So she ends up doing some research and finds out that Walter Bishop was the premier scientist and things of this nature. And so she decides that she needs to talk to him, that he's going to give her the answers. And so she basically gets up the nerve to march into Brill's office and bring this information to him. And this is very shortly here we're going to be introduced to Walter Bishop and his son, Peter.
It's me. Liaison. I found a connection between the Hamburg flight and what's happened to Agent Scott. His name's Walter Bishop. He's a scientific researcher from Cambridge, born in 46, Harvard-educated, postgrad at Oxford and MIT. Look at the experiments he was doing in the 70s. I believe Dr. Bishop might have information that might tell us what happened aboard that plane and save Agent Scott's life.
Says the guy has been at St. Clair's for 17 years.
I saw that. An assistant was killed in his lab. Rumors about Dr. Bishop using humans as guinea pigs. He was charged with manslaughter, but was deemed mentally unfit to stand trial.
Why are you so sure Bishop's worth our time?
Why are you so sure he's not?
Listen, Dunham, you and I got off on the wrong foot.
If my past job performance as U.S. Marine Special Investigator offends you,
well,
there's really
not... Yeah, it does. A man who serves his country for 30 years has a few drinks and a small lapse in judgment does not deserve 5 years.
A small lapse in judgment that will haunt 3 young women for the rest of their lives.
But that's not tonight's business, is it? Look, DC has tasked me to make sure that our reaction to Flight 627 is beyond reproach. Now, it says here, in 1991, the glorious state of Massachusetts forbade Dr. Bishop from having any visitors, with the exception of immediate family. So, from where I sit, barging into a mental institution, waving the Patriot Act, which is what you need, and demanding FaceTime with some old lab rat who you think might be behind some of the most terrifying terror that I can possibly imagine, even
I'm
though
I'm coming to you with a solid lead, and your personal resentment
Man,
is
you're wasting your
you...
breath and my time. Do you understand, immediate family? You want to question Dr. Bishop, you go find his next of kin and have him escort you in. Talk to Bishop, uncover something substantial, and I will have your back. Until then, I am not so convinced. Now, can you handle that?
He does have a son.
Is the son local too?
Not exactly.
I believe Peter Bishop is in Iraq, and so, of course, Olivia has to get him, so she goes there. This is the exchange that they have.
Peter Bishop, Olivia Dunham. I'm with the FBI.
Okay.
You've heard of Flight 627?
The Hamburg flight, of course.
You may be able to help us with that.
No, I think you got the wrong guy.
Your father's Walter Bishop.
You know, the last time somebody asked me that, it was an accusation.
Well, he's the man we're looking to speak with, but due to his current status, you're the only one who can provide us access.
And what possible help could that man be to you? And what is it exactly that you're expecting me to do? Hop on a plane with you back to Massachusetts? I just got here, honey.
I can have you on a return flight here in 4 days, but first...
Let me save you the time. I'd rather stay here in Iraq. That's how much I want to see my father.
I'm going to beg you, as one human being to another. Your father may be able to save someone who's dying. Someone I care about very much.
Sweetheart, we all care about someone who's dying. I can't help you, I'm sorry.
I know why you're here. I have your file.
What file?
The one the FBI would say doesn't exist. And it has everything. Where you've been, what you're running from, and what you need while you're here. So either you come with me, or I let certain people know your whereabouts.
When do we leave?
And with that, they return to the States. They go to the institution, and Olivia gets her opportunity to talk to Dr. Walter Bishop. And of course, you know, he is, this is our first introduction to him. He is kind of, you know, he's been given a lot of drugs, you know, antipsychotics and all this other stuff. So his mind is kind of muddled. We're not exactly sure what, you know, the lowdown on a doctor. We're going to find that out as, you know, the season progresses. But at first meeting, obviously, it's pretty clear that he is not altogether stable. And so she has this conversation. And again, this is some great John Noble where he's kind of all over the place. Man, he just chews up the scenery. And I always felt that as you watch this entire series, he plays off so well against Olivia and so well against Peter. And he has moments with Astrid that are, you know, with every person, he's a little bit different. He plays off a lot of the similar ways between his son and Agent Dunham. He plays off a little bit different with Astrid, but it's just so great because it's not just he's kind of like crazy and kind of muddled with all the things that have gone on. It's also that, you know, you see that he can treat people individually based on who they are. And everything just works together so well. And again, you know, watching this pilot episode, it really made me fall in love with this show that much more. And I can't wait. I haven't been this excited for a rewatch since like 2 years ago when I rewatched all of Buffy. And, you know, before that it was Babylon 5. It was just nice to be able to just sit down and go through it. And really, I don't mind watching these a second time to pull the audio because it's nice to kind of nitpick through things. But he just the fact that John Noble has not gotten an Emmy, I don't even know if he's been nominated, but man, he should have taken home an Emmy every single year that this show is on, because you cannot tell me that anybody has done a better job than him. It's just absolutely fantastic. And it's not even that I love this show. It's just that I've seen so many episodes of it. He's just a fantastic actor. Just amazing. Anyway, here's the clip.
Dr. Bishop. Dr. Bishop.
I just said this was when did this
happen? The incident on the plane happened 4 days ago. Agent Scott was injured the next day.
Already indurated. Translucent muscular tissue visible.
On Scott, you mean can you see through his skin? Yes.
Oh, that's not good. To see through the skin. It's tricky. It's advanced. It's like that.
What's happening to him? Can it be reversed? What is it?
They have this horrible pudding here. Butterscotch pudding on Mondays. It's dreadful.
It's Thursday.
Oh. Oh, that's fantastic news. It can be reversed. Oh, what happened to your colleague? Years ago, I worked with lab animals, and some of them were afflicted but were saved.
So, do you remember what to do?
This place, they're
choice of therapies has...
Dr. Bishop?
You came here today with my son. I'm not allowed visitors, you see, except immediate family. And unless the order has been lifted, then it's a simple if-then formula. If you are here, then so is he. I would so much, so very much like to see him.
He asked for you.
Thanks, sweetheart. I really appreciate that.
Hey, I didn't tell him you were here. And call me sweetheart one more time, I'd really like that.
Hello, Walter.
I thought you'd be fatter.
You thought I would be fatter? Excellent. First words, perfect.
No, as a boy, you were rounder.
Yes, I was, until the summer before high school. Not that I'd expect you to remember that.
May I see something?
What are you doing? Take your hands off of me!
Pupils are good. They're good. Thank goodness. How... advanced is your colleague's condition, which is something that I'm unable to deduce without a first-hand examination. I must see Mr. Scott myself, which I am unable to do under present law, or unless signed out by a legal guardian who must be once again a relative.
What are you asking me to... No. Guardian? No, forget it.
He'll do it.
No, I will not.
One phone call. That's all it takes. You want me to make it? Because I've got my phone in my pocket. Now it's out of my pocket.
You wanted my father. Now you've got my father. Which falls into the category of be careful what you wish for, sweetheart.
And one of the reasons that I enjoy Agent Dunham so much, and I have to say that it really, in the scheme of things, whether the actress, whether Anna Torv have actually watched any X-Files or not, I have got to say that in the scheme of things, it really does seem like she's taken her lead from Gillian Anderson, because she just holds herself so professionally and does such a good job, and she's put up with all this abuse and all this crap from all these different guys, right? Her boss and Peter. And I just love the part where she's like, good, call me sweetheart one more time, I'd like that, you know? I just think that that's great. The first time she really gets worked up about something, right? Well, anyway, he ends up examining Agent Scott, and he picks up a scalpel, and Peter kind of flips out because he's like, you know, whoa. And what he needs to do, he needs to take a skin sample. And I don't know how they did it, and not until I get the DVDs and I watch the special features will I know how they did it. But he has this translucent skin, and he just takes a little tiny piece with a scalpel. And it just looks so cool. I mean, it just looks so real, the way that they did it. And it looks like it's like Jell-O or something, the way that they do it. But just really, really well done. And then the next clip is him taking it and trying and talking about taking it back to his lab.
But I need to take this to my lab right away.
Your what?
Kresge Building Basement, Harvard. We should leave. I have my sample.
Your lab was shut down after you left.
I'm sorry? Wake up. It's gone.
No.
Walter, there is no lab.
It's a perfect...
No! Damn you! Damn you!
We need to get him back immediately.
Lisa, when did you get back?
I need your help. I want you to know I've successfully had Dr. Walter Bishop released from St. Clair's, and he requires the use of his old laboratory.
I'm sorry, what?
Kresge Building, Harvard. Basement. The university's been using it for storage for the last 17 years.
It would be nice to think that your tenacity in this case is a byproduct of a remarkable and robust professionalism. But I can't help but wonder if there wasn't something going on between you and Agent Scott.
Get the lab for Bishop.
And again, a fantastic scene because it's not as though Agent Dunham is being cocky. I think at this point she's realized and that she has done all the work on this case. I mean, she has really made a lot of inroads and put a lot of effort into defining answers, not only into saving, you know, Agent Scott, but also into finding out, you know, who's behind all this stuff. And I think she's just tired of taking abuse. It's not like, you know, she's done her job. And I thought that it was a nice, you know, rather than having some kind of knockout, drag out fight, you know, with her boss, she has just, you know, she knows that she's in the right. And what's he going to do? He's not going to eat the lab. She's done everything else. All he's got to do is clear this lab, right? Anyway, if you could hear the timer in the background, I'm sorry. I got, long story short, I went to open house and I turned my back for 10 seconds. Next thing I know, I got to cook a turkey for the school. I don't know. So my turkey's done. And I don't mind cooking turkey, except I got to cook 14 more. And doing the one for the school is just like, oh, really? Yeah. Anyway, so the next clip is, you know, they get the lab opened up and, you know, all the equipment's still here. He's uncovering everything. It's got all this dust on it. And she asks if he needs anything else. And this is one of many Walterisms I will be trying to I'm going to try to collate these for the season, if at all possible.
Dr. Bishop, I've ordered a standard forensics work package. Is there anything else you need?
Optical coherence tomograph, a flesh study. 2,000 pounds of silicon, at least 5 anonymous blood samples, volunteer donors, microorganism detector. NASA grade, of course, there's still Nassius.
Yes.
Oh, she's still here. This tank was the best. And a 2-year-old Bosaurus.
A what?
A cow. He wants a cow.
Purebred, not crossbred. This is important. Mature weight, 850 pounds. Internal fat average, 2.37.
Is he joking?
Genetically, humans and cows are separated by only a couple lines of DNA. So it's an ethical test subject.
Where'd you learn that? MIT?
No, actually. I picked that up reading books. You should try it sometime. It's fun.
Get him the cow.
Fantastic, thank you. Anything better than a cow, the human. Unless you need milk, then you really need a cow.
Okay, the next clip is the one we've all been waiting for. This is where we get into the fringe science area, you know, something that Walter knows a bit about. Before I play the clip, I would be remiss if I did not mention the music of Fringe. Now, I am very ignorant when it comes to this, and I meant to do some more research before I recorded stuff for this episode. But I need to do some more research. I am more than happy if anybody has any information or anything, they want to send any kind of sound clip. If anybody has the Fringe soundtrack and, you know, they want to talk about what's on there, I would love to hear an audio file of whatever anybody has to say. But the music, not only is it good music that I really enjoy, you know, because listening to these sound clips, it really stands out. But man, they do such a great job of meshing it in with, you know, I would say that on a scale of 1 to 10, as far as putting the music together so that it works with the episode when you're watching it, this is a 10. Especially this pilot episode, man, they just do such a good job. And the way that they, that clip that I just played, you hear the music picking up the violins and everything and the way that they're playing it. And it's kind of serious yet a little bit jaunty at the same time. When you see the following scenes and how that works as a transitional piece and the scenes transition as they're setting up the lab, it just does a fantastic job. But anyway, I'll be talking more about music as we get more and more episodes under our belt. But anyway, this next clip is when we talk about Fringe Science, and it's again, you know, I didn't want to put this whole clip. I was trying to keep the clips as short as I could because it's just such a long episode. And we kind of jump in the middle of the conversation. But, you know, basically Walter tells Olivia that Agent Scott has 24 hours left. They still haven't been able to track down the compounds, and nobody has seen what this guy looked like except for Agent Scott, the guy that that blew up everything and was responsible for all this. So the idea is for her to be able to pull that image from his mind.
I'm so sorry that I can't offer you a less dangerous solution.
What do you mean?
Didn't I mention it?
Whatever you think you said, you didn't say.
The synaptic transfer system, shared dream state.
What do you mean, shared dream state?
Human brain generates a quantifiable electric field. I posited in 1976 that it is possible to synchronize the fields of two distinct minds to allow the sharing of information across the unconscious state, like a string between two tin cans.
You know what's great about that is that it's completely insane.
You're saying I can talk to John in a coma, and he can tell me what the suspect looks like?
It's not an exact science.
It's not even science.
Have you done this before?
I have used this technique to extract information from a corpse once. You can do that if they haven't been dead for longer than 6 hours.
Right, because after 6 hours, that's when they're really dead.
You could access his memories, assuming there's no brain damage. Of course, you'd have to have an electromagnetic probe placed in the base of your skull whilst immersed without clothing in the old tank. And you'd be heavily drugged.
What sort of drugs?
Oh, a mix of ketamine, neurontin, lysergic acid, diethylamide.
That last one's LSD, by the way. Acid?
It'll take at least a few hours. I'd need your help to synthesize it if it's not too much
trouble.
Yeah,
sure, no problem. That sounds like fun. The man who was just released from the mental institution, he wants to give you a drug overdose, then stick a metal rod into your head and put you naked into a rusty tank of water.
No, I don't want to. No, I'd rather not. I'm just saying I can.
Okay, Olivia. Excuse me for a sec. Now, you're obviously under severe duress, and you haven't slept since Iraq, and the man you care about might die, but I'm telling you, that man will kill you.
You don't understand the procedure.
John will do it for me. Set it up. I'll get DHS authorization to bring John here.
This is unbelievable. This is insane. He is insane, and you're insane for following him.
Excellent. Let's make some LSD.
Come on! How has he not got an Emmy? I don't understand. I mean, that was brilliant. No, I don't want to. I would rather not. I'm just saying that I can. And let's go make some LSD. Come on, this is brilliant stuff.
Put him over here.
Salt will make you float.
Charlie, did you get me in to see William Bell?
Massive Dynamic isn't exactly being forthcoming or courteous. And apparently William Bell is out of the country for the next 2 weeks.
What's this?
Oh, a sweet little memo from their general counsel.
So Bell doesn't want to talk?
Or he's just being the head of a $50 billion corporation.
Well, screw this. I want to drive a tank through William Bell's office and find out what he knows.
I know you do, but I'm here to tell you the bad news. It's going to be another 48 hours till we get a court order.
You should probably strip to your underwear. Hello.
What the hell was that?
Charlie, we don't have 48 hours. I need you to get to Bell. If Walter fails, Bell could be the only one to save us.
What? Libby, what's happening here? You've cleared all this with Broyles.
Somewhat?
Well, somewhat doesn't sound good. Is that a cow?
Yeah, that's Gene. Listen, Charlie,
I need you to promise me you'll do whatever you can.
Of course. You know that. Hey. Be careful.
Okay. The experiment works, and she's able to... We have a really great scene here. We have her, like, with the dream world, which is great. You know, I mean, no problem. Nothing special there. I mean, not bad, but it's just nothing special. But what I liked was when she wakes up, because she comes out of it and she jumps out by that tank, and the first words, she's like trying, she's huffing and puffing, and she's like, I saw him. I saw his face. So they're able to start tracking him down. In the meantime, we're trying to find William Bell, who was Walter's partner. Bell went on to be, you know, to make a gazillion dollars and do Massive Dynamics, which is the big corporation in this series. You see Massive Dynamics everywhere, okay, when you watch this episode. If you haven't gone back and watched it, go back and watch it. I mean, you see their slogan, their symbol, their name everywhere. There's a scene on the roof, you see it on the satellite dishes, you see it on airplanes, you see it everywhere. They make just everything. This next scene is when Olivia goes to Massive Dynamics. She's trying to see William Bell. And you have to keep in mind that we don't see William Bell for a very long time. He's just kind of missing in action. Nobody understands where he's at or what's going on, but they keep trying to find him as certain episodes go on. In the meantime, we meet Nina Sharp, played by Blair Brown. She does a fantastic job. Love this character. Just love her. And we will get to see, again, a lot of these characters get to play multifaceted characters when we hit, like, season 3. And I don't want to give anything away. You know, I'll spoil this episode and a little bit of the season, but I don't want to give too much away for those people that were watching it. And although I do want to say that you folks out there that haven't watched Fringe, if you want to do a rewatch, let's fire this up on the Google group. You pick an episode. I don't care. Somebody can pick any episode. And I will watch it, and we can have a Google Hangout and talk about it. Unfortunately, the way the holiday falls this year, I don't get any extra days off. But man, I would be willing to try to reschedule or move my schedule around so I can have like a Sunday evening off and do a Google Hangout and just talk about the episode without sound clips or anything. I don't think I can make sound clips work. I could try, but I don't know. But I would love to be able to do that, to have a conversation about any of the episodes. If you want to send feedback about any episodes, all you got to do is put Fringe in the subject line and send me the audio file. Put Fringe, season whatever, episode whatever, name the file that, send the MP3 my way. I will make sure that whenever I get done, finished doing a breakdown, I will throw the MP3 in there. I'm looking for like 3 to 5 minutes. You can do less, you can do more. I don't care. Let's say I want to try to keep them under 5 minutes if at all possible. 1 to 3 minutes would be better, but you know, whatever you want to do. And I will put them, I will incorporate them into the reviews, because this show is just, I haven't been this excited since, you know, I started talking, Babylon 5. I just have not been this psyched for a show. There's so many things about this I like. Anyway, what I wanted to say is when she goes to Massive Dynamics, I got to mention the titles for this show are really cool, because they're kind of three-dimensional and they float wherever they're at. If you watch, I don't know how far in this is. This is the last third of the episode, but you will see one of the observers walking by the Massive Dynamic building. He's wearing a hat. That's how you'll know. Very pale. If you watch, you will see him walk right in front of the building. Anyway, she goes and she meets Nina Sharp, and this is her introduction to Nina, and they have this conversation.
I was hoping to speak with William Bell.
I'm Nina Sharp, executive director. I only have a few minutes.
Our primary suspect is a former employee of yours, Richard Stieg, who may have used research from your company to develop a self-eradicating airborne toxin. We don't know why or for whom, but it appears he was willing to sacrifice his own brother. Whatever killed those people on that plane got on board through his insulin pen. So do you want to talk to me?
Danielle, please assemble everything we have on Richard Stieg for Agent Dunham here. I remember Richard Stieg. He worked in our weapons systems research lab. He was caught 3 months ago trying to leave the premises with classified information. He was terminated immediately. We referred his name to the Justice Department. We have done our due diligence, Agent Dunham.
And if you choose to drag our company and Dr. Bell's name into this matter, you will be hearing from our attorneys.
How long have you worked for Dr. Bell?
16 years. I owe Massive Dynamic my life, and that is not an exaggeration. I was a runner most of my life. In the 97 Boston Marathon, I felt strangely tired. One day at the office, Dr. Bell noticed my discomfort and insisted I go for a CAT scan. Cancer spread so severely, I had to have my arm amputated that week. That first scanner that found my cancer was built by this company. The robotic assist tools that were used in my surgery, the drugs I took afterwards, were developed and manufactured by Massive Dynamic. And my replacement limb was designed by Bell himself. Everything we have on Richard Stieg. Do you believe that Stieg may be part of the pattern?
I'm sorry, part of the pattern?
Oh, I assumed you had clearance.
Well, I'm cleared to know whatever you're cleared to know, Miss Sharp.
Apparently not. But suffice to say that we've reached a point where science and technology have advanced at such an exponential rate for so long, it may be way beyond our ability to regulate and control them. You should know what you're getting into, Agent Dunham. I would say this to my own daughter. Be careful. And good luck.
Also, the music there, fantastic. You know, again, just great the way that they do that. Anyway, they figure out who the guy is because she remembers seeing him, and then she goes to Mass Dynamic, gets the information. They're trying to track him down, and that's kind of what they're doing. Walter and Peter are sitting in the car, and the task force is trying to track this guy down. Agent Dunham, we have a very good action sequence here where she's chasing after him, jumping on rooftops. It's all very realistic the way that they do this, showing that, you know, she can do the hard work as well as being incredibly smart and putting things together. She's very physical as well if she needs to be. And Walter and Peter are sitting in the car, and they have this conversation, which is very, very important to everything that happens here, because one of the key things to season one and season two of Fringe is the relationship between Peter and Walter. I cannot stress that enough. Peter's bitter because Walter was never there for him. And, you know, apparently some things happened with their mother. And we find out later on the whole story. I don't want to give any of that away, but let's just say from Peter's point of view, he's very bitter about this. And Walter, of course, you know, thinks that you know, he has some understanding that he hasn't been there for his son, but we're going to find out a great deal of information later on to show that in fact he has been there, and he's gone above and beyond for his son. Anyway, we have this conversation, and then we have Peter ends up seeing the guy. He ends up coming out of the building, and Peter ends up tackling him.
Your skin tone suggests you might be suffering from arterial hypertension.
Don't tell me what I'm suffering from. And there are no visible signs of hypertension.
When this is over, please don't send me back. I don't want to go back.
Look, Walter.
This experience. You woke me up again. You can't put me back to sleep.
It was hardly my idea. Any of it.
Whatever punishment you think I deserve, I swear I have already endured it. 17 years. Please, son.
Come on, no Emmy. Come on, people. I do want to mention one other thing about Fringe that I really notice over any other show that I've listened to. And keep in mind, when you're doing the breakdowns, as anybody out there who has done this and pulled audio knows, you really start to notice when you put a set of headphones on or even a pair of earbuds and you're listening to this and you're trying to pull the audio, the sound quality of this show, the sound quality of the dialogue is phenomenal. I don't know who's in charge of this. I'm sure I can look it up, but thank you. Thank you for making a show that just sounds amazing. And every time John Noble talks, his voice is so interesting and distinct. And the way he delivers his lines, you know, when he's doing these regular conversational voices, it just clear, fantastic. I love everything about it. Okay. I'm gushing here. I'm going to stop doing that. Anyway, they have the suspect in custody. I don't even know what that is. They have it and have him in custody. Oh my God, I can't speak. And so, you know, Livia's questioning him, throwing all his stuff at him, and he's like, no comment, you know, go screw yourself, you know, don't worry about it. And he's just giving her the runaround. And Peter is just, you know what, he just kind of had enough. And, you know, he snaps just a little tiny bit, okay? And he sees her leave. And he tells Walter to stay there, and he goes into the room because he's already kind of in this little anti-room, and there's not really any security, and he has a coffee cup in his hand, which is going to be his weapon of choice here. I love this scene. I love that we see that Peter is capable of this, because here's somebody who's a genius, and he's looking at a problem directly and saying, this is what needs to be done, and he gets results.
Walter? Stay here.
Where are you?
The compound affecting Agent Scott. It's water soluble, right? We might not know what it is, but we know what it does. So if I wanted to, I could extract the contaminated fluids from his body. That would allow me to slip it to you whenever I wanted to. And your food, cup of coffee, the toilet. Nobody would ever know how it happened. The only problem is, the woman who is just in here, that's her friend who's dying. So I just don't have that kind of time.
No.
Tell me the chemical.
Hey,
now!
Stop! You can't do that.
No, you can't do that. I want the names of the chemicals. I'm gonna count to one. One.
The toxin was a magnesium-based ethylene glycol.
No, I understand that, but you're not listening.
Magnesium ethylene glycol with an organophosphate trick.
Walter, just stop for a second. His blood won't be able to absorb it before the side effects kill him.
You're saying what? He synthesized a calcium gluconate and a thiamine base?
Yes, exactly.
We can't. We need more of his blood. We have none.
That's not true. All agents are required to set up a backup blood supply in case we're wounded.
Autologous transfusion, that's brilliant.
We can create the antidote and then just dissolve it into Scott's stored blood. If we transfuse him intravenously, his body won't be overwhelmed.
A-plus boy. Well done. Let's begin.
Fantastic scene showing that Walter and Peter working together once they start hitting on all cylinders is just amazing. And also, again, music out of this world. Next scene is Olivia Dunham. She's waiting to hear about whether or not, you know, Agent Scott's going to make it, whether or not they're able to do anything with him, etc. And Detective Broyles approaches her. She's sitting up. Walter's lab's downstairs. She's sitting upstairs in the college hall, I guess, and just kind of sitting there quietly. And he comes down and sits next to her. And this is where we're kind of setting up the rest of the season and what it's going to be about.
Go downstairs.
Bishop says it'll be a while, but that it's looking auspicious. That was his word. What?
You've done some solid work here. Locating Bishop, getting him out, finding a way to get him to work with you. We're impressed.
Who's we?
What happened on that plane might be part of something more dangerous than just simple terrorism.
Simple terrorism?
In the past 9 months, there have been 36 authenticated incidents like the Hamburg flight. John Thompson, a normal kid, went missing back in 98, reappeared last month halfway around the world, hadn't aged a day. In the past few months, 46 other children who went missing that same year turn up. Same story. Local fishermen off the coast of Sri Lanka reports a low-flying plane emitting a high-pitched frequency that blows out all their windows. An hour later, same spot, an 8.7 subsurface earthquake creates a tsunami that kills 83,000 people.
So why are you telling me?
Patient in Lisbon who woke up after years in a coma began writing just numbers. They turn out to be exact real-time coordinates of our carrier battle groups in the Pacific. Intel that's classified above top secret.
So how is that even possible?
Come work for me, and I'll get you the clearance.
Oh,
to
stop!
Shut up. There's more you need to hear.
You must not have heard me. I said stop.
They're calling these events the pattern, as if someone out there is experimenting. Only the whole world is their lab. You've seen it now. You know.
I don't want to know. I have a job.
This is a more important job. Anything, anybody you need, you can have.
I like the job I've got. And the man I do it with, which you seem to have deduced on your own.
Look around. You see all these people going about their lives. No idea what's happening around them, what they're in the middle of.
I just want to go back to before.
Dunham, I don't think you can.
Again, the music, just fantastic. Okay, so this is what happens. Agent Scott wakes up. And in the meantime, you know, he's slowly healing. You know, they've obviously, he's got to stay in the hospital a little bit longer to rebuild certain, you know, chemicals in his body or whatever. She goes in and talks one more time with the guy that the suspect. And when she does, he says that somebody from her department had threatened him and was kind of in cahoots or whatever. And he tells her that he made a recording, and she finds the recording and plays it back. And in the process, realizes that, in fact, it was John Scott. And she has a flashback. The end of the recording is the same conversation he was having when they first went to the plane. And so she races off to, in the meantime, Agent Scott comes in and kills this guy. And, she's going down the road and he's going down the road, and, there's a car accident, and she ends up pulling his body out of the wreckage. And he's just, you know, he's all beaten and bloodied and everything else. And, they have this conversation.
Ask yourself. Why? Why I'm sent you to storage facility. Why?
I don't understand. Who are you working for? John! Tell me more. John.
Now, obviously, Olivia is pretty torn up because here's somebody who she's fallen in love with. And although we haven't seen some long building budding relationship, we kind of know where things stand. I mean, she's obviously very good at her job, and she's kind of risking all that to be with Agent Scott. And we see this scene where he says he loves her, and she kind of wavers on saying it back, and then realizes that in fact she does love him. And, you know, she loves this guy. She thinks she knows him inside now. She's willing to, you know, freely give of herself to him, only to find out that he is working against her interests and the interest of everything that she has kind of stood for. And so we have this terrible ending scene. And then she's driving with her partner, and you know, he gives this speech at the time that Charlie's talking, and at the time, you know, although I heard it, I was just like, yeah, okay, I didn't think there was anything special about it. But upon pulling the audio from this, it kind of does kind of set up the series when you think about it. I mean, I end up realizing that as far as conversations are concerned, this is